Senator, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning to you, Brad. A great way to start the day with a conversation with Brad Davis.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that the conversation that we're going to have, some of these facts, Senator, just don't make any sense. And I've got calls, and this is really the reason. You and I have been working on this for some time. And I think what the former mayor in Bridgeport did is a great help, too. But are you surprised at some of these figures?
Absolutely not. I think everyone in Connecticut knows that, and people are responding by leaving the state. On my own street in Meriden, I live on a really nice street in Meriden, been here for 37 years, Brad, and in the last 3 years, 11 people have sold their homes on my street and moved out of state. It's just testimony to the fact that Connecticut has become unaffordable, and a large part of that is due to the tax burden here in Connecticut. We tax anything and everything. We've got, you know, we are ranked number 50 in terms of Tax Freedom Day. We have to pay taxes longer than any other state in the country.
We are ranked number 50?
Yes. We're the worst. We go to almost the end of May before you've paid enough. That's what you got to pay as part of your income. So you're working for almost half the year just to pay the tax burden here in Connecticut. And the story that you allude to with the former mayor of Bridgeport, John Fabrizi, which was cited in the Connecticut Post, he was a Bridgeport mayor from 2003 to 2007, and he's leaving the state to go down to Florida. And it's very interesting, by the way, Brad. He basically apparently has a second house in Florida, and he lives there for 6 months and a day, and he becomes a citizen of Florida and not a citizen of Connecticut. And when that happens, he can register his car down there, avoid the car tax. He doesn't have to pay the income tax on his pension. He is estimated it saves him at least $4,000 or $5,000 a year in taxes at the minimum, just by having a second home down there. And a lot of people don't realize this, but of course, people who are wealthy have that option as well. So they can live in the state of Connecticut for almost half the year, but live elsewhere and avoid paying this Connecticut state income tax because they wouldn't be residents of the state. And this is what's killing us. We are caught in the perfect storm, if you will. We're the only state in the entire country that has not recovered its economic activity pre the recession. From 2007 through 2017, Connecticut had negative growth in its economic activity, 3.3% negative. The rest of the country grew by almost 17% at that point in time. So we are really paying the price for our high tax burden. Companies are not coming here. People are leaving here. And the mayor of Bridgeport, or the former mayor of Bridgeport, is a good example of people who can exploit the loopholes in the law and try to minimize their tax burden as much as possible.
You know, Senator, everywhere that I go, and I'm out a lot, people come up to me, talk to me, and this is what they talk about. And they can't understand why the state hasn't done something about it. I mean, seriously. And the more that I hear from these folks, the more I say to myself, something has to be done. You are the only one. And I tell you this, and I don't care what anybody says to me. You are the only one that has been on this from the very beginning. And I remember the first time you called me, and this was quite a while ago, and that's when it all started, and we started to build this so that the people of Connecticut finally would understand what is going on.
Brad, I can't hold a candle to your record, though. You were back there in the great anti-income tax rally back 27 years ago. And you warned, and Tom Scott and Joe Markley warned at that time that that would just be the beginning of the end. And sure enough, in the last 27 years, Connecticut has suffered because people are fleeing the state. We used to be very attractive from a tax point of view, and now people are responding to the tax burden, which is overwhelming here in Connecticut. And until we get that turned around, Brad, we're going to continue hurting. And that's why I think if for this year, the campaign, it's important for people to look and see who's going to hold the line on taxes and basically say enough is enough. We've got to turn the ship of state around by starting to reduce the tax burden, not just hold the line, but to actually reduce the tax burden on the people of Connecticut.
Well, there's no question. I have got all kinds of information, and I had somebody tell me, Brad, Connecticut is disastrous. And this was a gentleman who is very, very well off, and he is moving to Florida as well.
Well, Brad, when you start looking at the taxes that we have, I mean, we're the only state around that has an annual automobile tax. People come from New York, and you think of New York as being a high-tax state, and they're shocked when they see that there's a tax, an annual tax, a property tax on your automobile. We're one of the only states that has two taxes on gasoline. We not only have the 25 cents per gallon tax, but then we have the petroleum gross receipts tax, which is calculated as a percentage of the price. So now that we're pushing $3 a gallon, that tax is going up as well. And it's all hidden, of course. People don't see that because it's not disclosed at the pump. So I saw something the Yankee Institute put out at one point in time. They said there's something like 347 taxes and fees assessed on Connecticut citizens for the, quote, the services rendered by the state of Connecticut. That's unbelievable.
They're another group that I'm going to get on the radio, but this has got to be put out there. People have got to understand it and know that it can be corrected, and it's got to happen, or we're not going to have a state. I'm telling you right now, and I'm not trying to be dramatic. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd.
The day of reckoning is coming next year, Brad. I'm absolutely convinced of it. We have reached a point where we can't continue doing what we're doing. It's impossible to keep the state going the way it is. We're in the process of a collapse of the budget next year. And the first thing we've got to do is recognize that one reason why the budget is collapsing is because the state economy has been collapsing.
Say, can you hold on for just a few minutes? We just had a report on our news that you would think that crime has left Connecticut. If you listen to all the words in that particular report, Senator, I don't know if you heard that, but again, some of the things that was there, I don't know how they got to the figures.
Yes, the governor is cherry picking his facts and statistics to try to put his administration in the best light. But you and I both know, Brad, that his administration is responsible for the notorious early release program, which has allowed thousands and thousands of violent criminals out of our jails early. And then the governor brags about how the prison population is down. Well, it's no wonder why it's down. He's letting criminals out earlier than ever before. And the real tragedy, Brad, is that many of these violent criminals return right back to their life of crime and violent activity. And I have new statistics from the Department of Correction that we're going to release in another day or two regarding the catastrophic failure of the notorious early release program that supposedly rehabilitates prisoners and reduces risk in our community, but it's done just the opposite. I could tell you, Brad, just a kind of a preview of coming attractions, we've identified over 14,000 violent crimes committed by inmates who had been in Connecticut prisons and who were discharged early because they participated in the so-called risk reduction program. The reality is that there, you can go tell the governor, he's bragging about Connecticut being more safe. Tell him to talk to the 14,000 men, women, and children who have been assaulted, raped, murdered, strangled, kidnapped, etc., by inmates who were let loose from prison early because of his administration's early release program.
Senator,
we have all the data because the DOC was compelled to give it to me via the Freedom of Information Act, and we're going to make certain the public is well aware of the catastrophic failure of that program and the consequences for thousands and thousands of innocent victims here in Connecticut.
Senator, I want to ask you a favor.
Sure.
When are you going to present this because I'd like to have you on the radio with me and present it right here.
We have the data already. What we're doing is we're organizing it to make it easy for the public and the press to understand. We're hoping to do it in the next day or two, Brad. At the latest, it'll be next Monday, but we might be doing it on later this week. We're just trying to get it organized, and I will make certain you're at the top of the list to be contacted when we're ready to go public with that.
Well, I appreciate it because we started it. I'll never forget when we started it, and everybody was shocked, and they'll be shocked again. Now, let's go back for a few minutes to this whole situation about housing, and the lists go on and on and on. I've got information from different people, and you have already seen some of this. But again, these are folks that do have money. Ann and Gary, I'll leave their name, just Ann and Gary, are now residents of Georgia, part of the flight from Connecticut. And they have a nice little condominium in Palm Beach, Florida, and a home on Skidaway Island in Georgia. It's and also a beautiful house that they own in Black Rock, right here in Connecticut. The house is for sale, and they have had a tough time selling it, but this is on and on and on. There's all kinds of stories, but you don't hear anything about it.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you one thing, Brad. I have talked to, in the last few months, I've been knocking on doors, talking to people, and everybody is aware of neighbors leaving the neighborhood and moving out of state because they can't afford to live in Connecticut anymore. And it's particularly difficult for senior citizens, of course, who are stuck on a fixed income and they can't match the growth in the state tax burden. So they're hurting as much, if not more, than anybody else. And unfortunately for many of them, they're stuck here in the state. They don't have the freedom to relocate that others do. But anecdotally, Brad, I'll bet you every single one of your listeners can think of 2, 3, 4 people who have picked up and moved and left the state. People are voting with their feet. They're leaving the state of Connecticut, and we have got to change our tax policy if we're going to stop the bleeding and get Connecticut back on its feet again. It's not realistic to balance the budget with another tax increase. It cannot happen, and the day of reckoning is coming next year with the new budget, the new governor, and the new legislature.
You know, Senator, let's just say Ann and Gary, okay, now residents of Georgia. And of course they are going to be leaving Connecticut, but they are very successful people who are tired, and I'm quoting now, who are tired of the crush of taxes, not only in Bridgeport but in Connecticut, tired of congested roads, crumbling bridges, and living under the weight of looming billion-dollar state deficits and suffocating pensions and health benefits mounting in Hartford. Older people are moving out, one of the folks said, and young people are not coming in. So we are stuck with homes that we can't sell. Yeah. Now that is Brad, part of the problem.
Yeah, Brad. There's the hint of a rebellion in the making occurred only a month ago, actually about 6 weeks ago here in Meriden, where I live, when we had a referendum on the budget. The citizens were so upset by the 5% tax increase that was decided by the city council. They were motivated to circulate a petition and get thousands of signatures on it to force a referendum on the budget. And the budget was rejected by a vote of 94% to 6%. I mean, it wasn't like 51-49, Brad. It was a stunning, resounding, overwhelming defeat. And the people of Meriden, I know, were overwhelmingly opposed to the tax increases. And the city council did go back. They did reduce the tax increase. But I can tell you, I was at another meeting only 2 weeks ago, and the citizens are angry because the city council still basically, although they reduced the tax increase, it still was a 3% increase. And the residents are saying enough is enough. So I suspect strongly in next year's municipal elections, there's going to be a number of incumbents who are going to be hard-pressed to stay in office. The citizens have had it, and now they're taking to the streets and engaging in referendum and voting with their feet. It's going to have significant political consequences in the next year. I'm convinced of that.
Well, the reason that I started really working on this, of course, was way back when we met. But recently, I've had some other calls and I've talked with people, and I wanted to, on the radio, do what I did this morning and get you in here, because this is something that we cannot let die. You have no idea what the people have said to me. And I didn't know if I could get all of them to say something, but by gosh, they are very, very disappointed. No question about it. And I'm just not going to let them down. And no, I know you're not either.
No, you're doing a great service, Brad, because you're keeping your audience informed. You're a megaphone to the public. And one thing that's important for the public to know is we can do something about it. The folks in Meriden did have this referendum. They did get some relief, although not enough, but they got the attention of elected officials. I think a line has been drawn in the sand, and I think that public officials are going to have to recognize that tax increases have to be off the table to balance the budgets. We must learn to balance the budget the old-fashioned way, you know, cutting expenses and doing everything we can to protect our taxpayers. The burden is overwhelming. It's the highest in the nation, and we are losing our population because of that. And our economy is shrinking, Brad, because of that, because companies are not coming here. Companies are leaving here. If I have a second, Brad, I did a calculation of the effect on Connecticut's domestic product, its economic activity.
Uh-huh.
And Connecticut, since 2010, Connecticut lost 3.3%, while the rest of the country grew at almost 15%. That's equivalent to $45 to $50 billion of economic activity that Connecticut should be enjoying now, but it's not. Think about that. That kind of economic activity would generate billions of dollars of new tax revenue without increasing the tax burden. But Connecticut isn't enjoying what the rest of the country is enjoying because we've become such a high tax state. Nobody wants to locate their business here.
Well, I thank you for joining me this morning. And I know we're going to be talking soon because we're not going to let this go. We've got a story here, but more importantly, we've got citizens to protect here, and that's what we're going to do.
Yes. The message I want to convey to your audience is let your voices be heard. You let your local officials and your state legislators know enough is enough, and continue listening to Brad and calling in to Brad to let him know your story, too.
Thank you, my friend, and I'll talk to you soon.
Always great. We'll talk in the next few days about early release, Brad.
Absolutely. Take care.